Morning, brothers, sisters, and Sunday school scholars. Over the last few days, you have heard in succession the 7,000-year plan set out by the Almighty for the redemption of mankind on earth. What we are going to discuss during this Sunday school class is basically a broad overview of the plan. The basis of why we assert 7,000 years comes from a mix of the seven-day creation, the counting of the generations from Adam until today, and a very important revelation from Peter. Our brother and apostle Peter states in his second epistle, "But, beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day." In context, Peter is speaking about the reservation of judgment upon the world and the establishment of the new heavens under Christ. Yahweh is not slack concerning his promise, but is long-suffering, not willing that any should perish. Peter inserts in his cautioning this important premise. He first appeals to our attention by addressing us as beloved, and then prefaces his revelation with an urgent caution. Be not ignorant of this one thing. This one thing is of utmost importance, and it relates to the coming judgment and why it may seem to us that the Father is not expediently fulfilling his promises. And then Peter proclaims, "One day is as 1,000 years. And 1,000 years as one day." This is an amazing revelation, as it is an immediate statement of the theory of relativity, predating Albert Einstein almost 2,000 years. The typical scientist observes nature and life as it occurs at certain intervals of time. Seeing things occur at a constant rate over time, they make the assumption that these rates are constant. A biologist will state that the gestation period of a human fetus is 9 months. A geologist will state that the formation of a mountain from the colliding of the tectonic plates takes several thousand years. A physicist will state that the light from a star we see from the surface of the Earth takes millions of years to travel over the course of the universe. In order to make these statements, scientists must necessarily conclude a constant rate of change and exclude any idea of acceleration or deceleration of naturally occurring phenomena. To put this in perspective, at one point in time, you traveled from point A to point B 1,000 miles away. A typical scientist may observe that you and all other humans travel only 1 mile per hour. Thus, they conclude that it must have taken you 1,000 hours to travel from point A to point B. This is a fallacy, as it assumes a constant rate of change. What if you were in a rocket ship going 1,000 miles per hour? You would have reached point B in 1 hour. So while a scientist would proclaim over and over that it took you 1,000 hours to travel 1,000 miles, it could have really taken just 1 hour. So when Peter states 1,000 years as one day, what he is saying is that what normally takes 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years or a time immeasurable can be accomplished by Yahweh in as little as one day. So the events that took place in the creation during the 6 days, which scientists would state takes millions of years, were accomplished in only 6 literal days at an accelerated rate. If we were present during creation, what we would witness would be a rapidly changing environment happening so quickly that it would be like fast-forwarding a 4-hour movie from beginning to end in only a few seconds. Now, Peter also states that one day is as 1,000 years. So while the Almighty can accelerate the rate of nature relative to our comprehension of time, He can also decelerate or slow this rate. We even have proof of this in the book of Joshua. Yahweh said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand thou still upon Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Ajalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed until the people avenged themselves upon their enemies. The Almighty stopped time, or the rate of the rotation of the earth, in order for Joshua to overtake the Amorites. In light of the current knowledge of nature in the universe, the sheer power of our Father in heaven cannot be understated. Surely there is nothing greater than Yahweh. He is the master of time. What seems to us as humans as 1,000 years is but a day relative to the Most High. And it is with this knowledge that we understand the plan of Yahweh. The application of 1,000 years is as a day relative to human comprehension occurred during the 7-day creation as the Almighty commanded and the heavens and the earth was formed at an accelerated rate out of the desolation of the previous dispensation on the earth. The application of a day is as 1,000 years relative to human comprehension of time is currently ongoing from the fall of Adam until the delivery of the kingdom, after which a new heaven and a new earth shall be formed. But before we go over the 7,000 years, we must first understand how to measure time. Not in a worldly understanding, but how the Father wishes us to measure it. As it says, the sun, the moon, and the stars were given for times and for seasons. It is by these that we observe the passing of time. A week consists of 7 days, and a day consists of the daytime, or light, and the nighttime, or darkness. In English, we understand the 7 days to be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. By convention, Sunday is the first day, and Saturday is the 7th day. Each day begins at midnight, when the moon is at its apex in the sky, and noon is when the sun is at its midpoint. But, beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing. All of this is pagan. In Genesis 1, it is repeated over and over, there was night and there was day. This is how we are to calculate a day, from sundown to sundown, not from midnight to midnight. Current calculations of a day are all related to sun god worship. The first day of the week, called Sunday, or Dies Solis, was the day for worshiping the sun god, and it has its origins to the Babylonian and Canaanite deity Baal, whose symbol is the cross. Monday was the worshiping of the moon god, which the Muslims use as their symbol. Tuesday was for the worshiping of the war god Tyr, or in Latin, Mars. Wednesday was for the worshiping of the god Odin, or in Latin, Mercury. Thursday was for the worshiping of the god Thor, or in Latin, Jupiter. Friday was for the worshiping of the goddess Frigg, or in Latin, Venus. Saturday was for the worshiping of the god Saturn, which apparently there is no English equivalent. In school, you have probably heard these names before. They are the names of our solar system. Sol, the sun. Mercury, Venus, Gaia, the goddess known as Mother Earth, which many in the world still worship even today. Luna, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, the god known as Father Sky. Neptune, the god of the sea, also known as Poseidon. And Pluto, the god of the underworld, also known as Hades. So what are the names of the days in Hebrew? They have none. No day is more or less important than the one before it. The first day, which would start on Saturday evening, would merely be one. Then they would count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The 7th day would be a Sabbath, i.e. a day of rest from all labor and a total focus on the Most High. After the 7th day, they would begin and count again to the next seventh day. Now the world at large uses a solar calendar called the Gregorian calendar, named after the Pope. This calendar is really an adjusted version of the Roman calendar called the Julian calendar, named after Julius Caesar, who named the seventh Roman month after himself, July. The Roman calendar is in actuality based off of the Babylonian calculated solar calendar. So why a solar calendar? The solar calendar is centered again on the worship of the sun god in coordination with the solstices and equinoxes. When Pope Gregory adjusted the calendar by subtracting a few days and setting up the current leap year system, he did it so that the Easter holiday, named after the Babylonian goddess Ashtaroth, also known as Venus and Aphrodite and Ishtar, would coordinate with the spring equinox. In pagan mythology, the sun god would die and be reborn on the winter solstice. Historically, this has fallen on December 25th, which is the shortest day of the year. The months on the current Hebrew calendar have names of Babylonian gods, a remnant from their captivity and assimilation within Babylon. Nothing is so much glaring than the month called Tammuz, the incarnation of the sun god Baal, and the precursor of the Trinity doctrine. Previous months within the Hebrew calendar had no names and were merely counted like days. The days of a month were either 29 or 30, and it depended on when the first sliver of the new moon was seen. Once the first sliver was observed, the new month began. A Hebrew year consists of 12 to 13 months, 354 or 384 days. The determining factor was the barley harvest in relation to the Feast of First Fruits. The barley had to be ready, or a beev, for the Feast of First Fruits, which occurred on the first day after the Sabbath that occurred after the Passover. If the barley was not a beev, the Hebrews would add a month. This makes the Hebrew calendar a lunisolar calendar and the most accurate method of keeping time on the planet. At the Feast of First Fruits, which would be day one of the new week after Passover, the Hebrews were commanded to count seven Sabbaths, seven sevens, or 7 weeks. On the first day after the seventh Sabbath, they were to celebrate the Feast of Weeks, or Pentecost, so named because it is the 50th day. You can begin to see that the counting of the sevens is important. Now, just as the seventh day of the week was a holy convocation, the seventh month of the year began a series of high holy Sabbaths, consisting of the Feast of Trumpets on the first day, the Day of Atonement on the 10th day, and the Feast of Tabernacles on the 14th day and lasting 1 week. These feasts are intimately connected to the return of our Lord and the start of the 7,000 years. Even before Ezekiel, the application of a day for a year was prevalent in Hebrew counting of time. From the time in which they entered the Promised Land, the Israelites were to count the years as they counted the days of the week. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The seventh year was a Sabbath year. The rest they were to give was for the land. And the sixth year, they would grow enough crops to sustain themselves for the seventh or even eighth year, and let the land rest. By doing this, they practice an early form of crop rotation. The needed rest of the land allowed the soil to replenish in nutrients for the next 6 years, just as people need a rest within the week from their labor. Just as with the Feast of Weeks, the Israelites were to count seven sevens. After the seventh Sabbath, or the 49th year, starting on the first day of the first month of the 50th year, Israel would have a jubilee year. On this year, those Israelites who bought property from their fellow Israelites would give it back to their families so that their generations would not lose their inheritance of the land. The 50th year would also be year one of the counting of the Sabbaths and would begin the new counting. There are also seven decades of years, which would be 70. When Nebuchadnezzar sacked Jerusalem and carried Judah into captivity, it was proclaimed that the Jews would have to be in Babylon for 70 years before they would be restored. This amounted to a year for every Sabbath year in which the land did not rest from the kings of Israel. So 70 years times 7 would be 490 years. Counting from the time Nebuchadnezzar invaded, we have a date of approximately 1094 before the common era, or earlier, depending on where the Sabbaths fall, around which the kings of Israel began their reign. We also have the seven times proclamation. A time, or revolution, is 360. Seven times would be 7 times 360, or 2,520 years. Add these years to the 604 BCE invasion, we come to the date of 1917 and the liberation of Israel from the Turks by the English and the beginning of the return of the Jews to the Promised Land. We also have what is known as half a time. Half of 360 would be 180, which would amount to approximately 6 full months before the beginning of the 7th month. 7 times half a time would be 1260, a fairly important number when it comes to prophecy. So every seventh day is holy. The seventh month is practically holy. The seventh year is holy. And the seventh millennium is holy. As we are taught in Genesis, we have to count the days. And as we are taught by Peter, each day is as 1,000 years. So looking at Genesis and the days, we see the corresponding of each day with each millennium. Day 1, we have the shining of light upon the earth and the separation of day and night. In the first 1,000 years, we have primarily Adam and the offspring which consisted of the sons of God in Genesis 6, who walked righteously and were men of renown. But as the light of the sun dwindled into night to the beginning of the second day, or second millennium, we have darkness once again form in the world. As such, it was necessary to separate waters from waters, or the righteous from the unrighteous, via water. And so in the second millennium, Noah and his sons were lifted up over the mountains via the ark floating on the flood waters, while all the earth perished in the depths below. As night becomes day, the seed of Noah spreads and repopulates the earth. Just as Adam was the principal patriarch of the first day, or millennium, so was Noah the principal patriarch of the second day, or millennium. On the third day, land was seen, and the seeds of plants began to sprout into life. The beginning of the third millennium consisted of Abraham, whose seed would inherit the land of Israel and give life in abundance, and his progeny. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were just small glimmers of light in an otherwise dark night that consisted of the founding of Babylon, the building of the Tower of Babel, the scattering of the nations, and the confusing of the language. Towards the middle of the third day, when the darkness of night became light, Moses led his people from captivity and gave to them the seed of truth, establishing them as a nation. In the light of the latter half of the millennium, we had the time of the judges, and at the end of the day, we have the establishment of the line of King David, whose seed shall sit upon his throne forever. On the fourth day, during the night, the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah deviate from the law and from righteousness. And so Yahweh gives them up to the surrounding nations, Assyria and Babylon, respectively. The fourth day consisted of the sun and the moon and the stars. In other words, the heavenly bodies. Heaven, being used in metaphor, represents the political sphere or ruling regime, with the stars being persons of authority. The fourth millennium consisted mainly of the moving of these heavenly bodies within the political sphere and the ruling over the whole earth. First, we had the ruling kings of Israel and Judah. Then we have Babylon, the winged lion. Then Persia, the bear. Then Greece, the leper. And finally Rome, the beast. At the close of the fourth day, there is the birth of the one who is called the morning star, the brightest star in the sky, and is called the sun, with healing in his beams. That is, of course, our great King Yeshua the Anointed, the Son of the Most High. The apostolic fellowship existed in the last century of the fourth millennium, which would be the first century of the Common Era. The fifth and sixth day in creation consisted of the creation of animals. Seeing how the Gentile nations and the people thereof are often compared to animals in Scripture, it seems fitting that these last millennia are called the times of the Gentiles. The times of Catholic rule in Europe has been known simply as the Dark Ages. The only bright light to Catholic dominance was the Muslims, which began in the 7th century and checked papal expansion into Africa and the Middle East, especially Jerusalem and the Holy Land. In the 6th millennium, the day portion largely consists of the end of Catholic rule and the reestablishment of the truth. As the sixth day comes to a close, as man was created on the sixth day, so will the Son of Man come again and establish himself over all the beasts of the earth, that is to say, the nations. Take note, Adam was given dominion over the beasts on the sixth day. Christ also shall be given dominion over the nations in the sixth millennium at the close of this era. Finally, we come to the seventh millennium. On the seventh day, Ha Elohim rested and consecrated the day as a holy convocation, a separate rehearsal or foreshadowing of a greater time period of rest. Christ is specifically called Lord of the Sabbath. This Sabbath is the 7,000 years, which is a time of peace and rest for man, animals, and the land. All worldly strife has ended, and all are focused on dedicating themselves to Yahweh. After the end of the millennial rest, when all have been perfected, the new week begins. The Father himself comes down and shall be all and in all, a new beginning, a new heaven, a new earth. So there we have it. A day is as 1,000 years. 1,000 years may seem like a long time to us, but relative to an eternal deity, it is but a passing moment. But as Peter states, the Almighty does not wish for anyone to perish. He would not have the Lord overtake you as a thief in the night. We must be ever observant. By simply counting the days, the years, and the millennia, we can all see that the time of the Lord is close at hand. His return is imminent. So we must ask ourselves, what are we going to do with the time we have before his coming? Who can stand before one that can control both time and space and bend all to his will, who is the creator and sustainer of all things? Why wouldn't we obey with faithful obedience in his Son? Now, if this leads to eternal rest in the Father, later. It is good to remember and reflect on these things today. Thank you.